Welcome to Focus on the Community on Memories 107.9 WAMW and worldwide live from WAMW, AMFM.com. I'm Grant Schwartzentruber. Each week we focus on a topic important to our community. Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington. Well, welcome to Focus on the Community. I'm excited about today's show. I'm on with Mr. Brett Voorhees of the state. He's the state president of AFL-CIO. And this is going to be a Labor Day message today, and just talking about history of labor and why we celebrate it. Mr. Voorhees, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
Let's start off, as we normally do with some of our guests, just talking about your background and how you became president of our state chapter of the AFL-CIO.
Yeah, absolutely. I was pretty fortunate growing up. I consider myself a union brat. I was fortunate to grow up in a union family. My father was an IBEW member and worked for Indianapolis Plumber and Light, climbing poles, and then went to work for the AFL-CIO.
And sorry, IBEW, that's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, is that right?
Yes, I'm sorry.
No problem.
And so he was involved in his union quite a bit. So at the dinner table, it was nothing but really union and politics. And I took an interest in it myself. And I actually became a steelworker in the early 90s. And I started working in a plant called Rexnord, Linkbelt, which is on the west side of Indianapolis, and which unfortunately just recently has closed shop and moved to Mexico. One of those fatalities from the so-called fair trade.
Yeah, that was a kind of a recent thing in the news, and we'll cover that here in a little bit when we talk about current events, but. Anyways, yeah. You were talking about your childhood and steelworking, and you worked at Rexnord. I apologize for cutting you off there.
No, absolutely. And I went to Rexnord, got involved in my local union, and held several different hats in the local union. Went to work for the Steelworkers International, and now I've been president. I'm on my second term as president of the Indiana AFL-CIO. I was first elected in 2013. So I've had a very fortunate labor life. My whole entire adult life.
Absolutely. And you talked about that you were elected as the president of the AFL-CIO. How does that work? How do you become president of AFL-CIO?
What happens is every 4 years there's a convention, and at that convention there's an election for the president of the Indiana AFL-CIO and the secretary treasurer of the AFL-CIO and all of its officers. There's 20 core officers, vice presidents is what we call them, of the Indiana AFL-CIO. And they are elected by the body. All the affiliates that are the affiliates, which the unions that are affiliated with the AFL-CIO, which there's right at about 300,000 members we have statewide, carry their votes to the convention. And that's how we are elected to office.
And you said 300,000 members statewide?
Yes.
Wow. That's honestly a lot more than what I thought. That's quite the contingency.
No, it's quite a large group. And they're all represented either on the national level or the state level by the AFL-CIO. That 300,000 is not even including some of the other unions like the NEA, the ISDA. I have no idea how many members, you know, they have, which is several thousand within the state as well. So we've still got a pretty considerable size of labor movement in Indiana.
Gotcha. And AFL-CIO, just for our listeners, and I kind of know what it is. I fancy myself a history buff of sorts. AFL and CIO were, I guess, two different organizations, and then they came together. But maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, the AFL, which stands for American Federation of Labor, and then the CIO is Congress Industrial Organization. And the AFL actually started off as it was the building trade, construction trade side of the union. And then the CIO was more of your industrial union, your steel workers, your auto workers, and those unions. And then I believe it was, my gosh, you're going to stump me here. I think it was 1942 when the AFL and the CIO actually joined together as one to create the AFL-CIO.
Yeah, I was going to test you here. I was going to ask you what year it was, so you may have passed. I have no idea. So, well, it was really interesting kind of learn about your childhood, and you talked about growing up in a house. You said you were fortunate to grow up in the house you grew up in, kind of a union brat. Talked a lot about labor and politics around the dinner table, and that's really interesting. My dad worked in coal most of his life, and he participated, or I guess was observed the UMWA 78 strike here in Indiana, and saw some of that and observed some of that. I don't know that he was necessarily involved, but was mm-hmm. impacted by that in certain ways. So I knew about unions, you know, as a young person as well. Mm-hmm. So tell us about, I guess, some of the successes that AFL-CIO and labor history has had. I mean, there's a number of successes, and it's part of the reason we celebrate Labor Day, I think.
No, absolutely. I mean, there's so many successes. I mean, you know, all the way back to the 1940s, and even back to the early 1800s, where, you know, labor unions have actually, you know, formed in one way, one factor or another. And I mean, you know, today's society, you know, if you get, you know, a 40-hour week, a paid 40-hour week, you know, you can thank a union for that. You know, if you get overtime pay, you can thank a union for that. If you get your weekends off, you can thank a union for that. There's a lot of things that the general public doesn't quite understand that they inherited the benefits from, but it's the unions that fought and got those. And got those things for not only the union folks, but the workers in general.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, the labor has a long and proud history. Was it Eugene Debs was one of the founders of maybe the modern American political movement? Samuel Gompers, I think, mm-hmm. is a guy that I remember. Why is it that we... And maybe I asked this a different way earlier, but why is it that we celebrate Labor Day, and why is that important?
Well, I think it's important. It's just a day to celebrate and commemorate those who work hard for a living every day. Those who leave the house in the morning and go and work hard and come home and provide for their family. And it's a time to celebrate that. It's a time to celebrate and take it easy and spend some time with your family. Whether it be a barbecue, picnic, whatever the case may be, and it's those workers' day. It's their day to be able to relax and reap the benefits that they've fought hard for.
Absolutely, and you talked about how the kind of the intersection of labor and politics, and we won't go deep into that, but. Tell us, you know, you said growing up, that was the talk around the dinner table. Tell us about labor's history traditionally in the political realm.
Yeah, I mean, it shows that obviously, I mean, you know, unions exist today by the stroke of a pen. And I mean, you know, unions are, and they are trying it today and every day. We could also be taken away at the stroke of the pen also. Which deals with politics. I mean, dealing with our legislators. You know, not even talking about party lines. You know, we're talking about just people in general that politicians that are favorable to labor unions or workers in general. You know, it's our job to educate all workers. You know, whether you're white collar, blue collar, on the issues, and make sure that when you know we go to the polls. You know, that they're well educated on those issues, not your wedge issues, but making sure that they keep that 40-hour work week, making sure that you keep those weekends off, making sure that you're able to go on a vacation, you know, once a year with a livable wage, making sure that you have decent benefits, making sure that, you know, a woman has maternity leave when she's off, you know, having a child. I mean, there's just so much involved that it involves, you know, the entire workforce and not just the labor union workforce, and it all starts at the halls of Congress, whether it's in Washington, D.C., or the Indiana General Assembly, or you're in your local governments as well.
Absolutely. And you talked a little bit about recent American politics, and I want to ask you this because it seems as if on a particular issue of tariffs that the parties and some of the key opinion leaders, they've kind of switched teams a little bit of late. Mm-hmm. Maybe talk about that. You know, when I was growing up, you don't know how old I am, but I'm not that old and I'm not that young, so somewhere in between, okay? You know, NAFTA was kind of the talk in the 90s, and you had a Democrat president supporting NAFTA.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got a Republican president, you know, dissing NAFTA or trashing NAFTA a bit and talking about tariffs and some of these things. Tell us how that happens and why it happens and how labor plays into that.
Well, when NAFTA was first brought about in the 90s, obviously from President Bill Clinton, we were not happy, that's for sure,
right.
Especially being a steel worker. And it was a sham. It was an awful trade deal. And we couldn't have been more disgusted with the president at the time. We were hoping maybe we would get something done with President Obama. That did not happen. Now don't get me wrong. I mean, both President Clinton and President Obama did lots of great things for the labor movement and for workers in general. The trade deals just happened to be a very bad thing that we were hoping we would get more assistance out of from our Democrat presidents that we helped get elected. President Trump came along and I gotta applaud him. I mean, for his stance on trade. I mean, he's done an outstanding job. He said he was gonna renegotiate NAFTA. We're working on that, working with him. Our leaders from the different affiliate unions are working with him on renegotiating those deals, and especially with China. I mean, the way that China has been basically exploiting workers and you know, the currency manipulation and everything else, and President Trump has put a stop to that on the tariffs. I mean, you know, the tariffs that he put on China we were excited about. I mean, it helps the steel industry and the aluminum industry, which we probably represent 90% of both of those industries. And so we think it's a good thing. It's keeping our jobs here in America. The only flaw that we don't like about it is going after Canada and going after the UK, you know, countries, the European countries. Those are good allies of ours. You know, those are ones who are not exploiting workers with child labor. Those are the ones who are not, you know, manipulating currency. Those are the ones that actually are having fair trade with us. So I wish the president would just focus on China, who's the biggest offender of everything that's gone on as far as, you know, unfair trade. So, but I do applaud him for what he's done so far. It's at least there's a movement there. At least there's things happening. And they're happening in real time, and they're not just talk.
Yeah, lots of interesting stuff to unpack there. And just for our listeners, I am on with Brett Voorhees. He is the president of the state AFL-CIO, and we've invited Mr. Voorhees on to tell us a little bit about labor history and why we celebrate Labor Day and just some different issues surrounding that. So I'm going to push back a little bit on the free trade thing and the fair trade thing. And I'll just ask you kind of a point blank question, and maybe you'll know the answer based on how I ask it. But is free trade not a good thing?
It's not. I mean, you know, obviously there's a huge difference between free trade and fair trade. I mean, free trade basically just leaves everything open.
But is that not fair?
The free trade? No, it's not fair. And the reason why it's not fair, it leaves everything open. I mean, when we sign trade agreements with, let's just say, with China or Bangladesh, whatever, you know, some of those third world countries like that. I mean, you know, they're exploiting workers. You know, they've got. I mean, the child labor is just heart wrenching. I've been to Bangladesh. I've seen what goes on overseas. I've seen how they mistreat these 8, 9, 10-year-olds you know, working them 80 hours a week, paying them 25 cents a day, living in shanties, living in flooded apartments and everything else, the way they treat them. And it's disgusting. And I don't think the United States should actually be working with people and trading with people that actually treat their people that way.
Sure. So
I've been to Mexico and seen the effects of NAFTA. Went through the maquiladoras and Matamoros and those areas. Now the factories were excellent. They were beautiful. But then you know you've got the workers actually living in skids that they build their own little homes in the neighborhoods in Mexico. I mean, I came across a young baby, a newborn, that was actually born without a cranium on the top of his head. His head was open on the top of it because of the water there, the contamination. They just allow all the runoff from the factories go into the creeks, and that's where they get their water to drink and to wash their clothes. It's just disgusting that our country would actually allow those things to go on.
Yeah. No, and I totally understand. I mean, but you would say if there's a, and I would say this as well, if we have a basic standard for workers' rights that countries can meet, then after that, essentially, it should be opened up, as you said. I mean, if they can meet basic standards, then we should let it go, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we live in a global economy, and I mean, trade is a must.
Right.
And I totally get it, and I understand. But also, you know, it's got to be fair trade. And that's the whole thing about using the terminology fair trade. There needs to be a livable wage, whether it's an international wage. There needs to be, you know, international environmental standards. And if our countries could get together and work something out like that, I think it would make everything better for not just our country, but the entire world.
Fair enough. I want to hop off that topic and go to a subtopic here. We talked about a couple of presidents, and you talked about Clinton and Obama and how they maybe didn't get things done for you, and you've been happy, perhaps, with the current administration because you believe they have gotten some things done for you. I mean, do you foresee, traditionally, I mean, I think it's a fair statement to say AFL-CIO would support more of the Democrat candidates. I do think, though, IBEW supported Bush maybe in 2000 or 2004, if I recall correctly. But anyways, traditionally, they've supported Democrat candidates. Do you foresee that changing just with some of these current events?
No, it has changed. It's changed quite a bit. And I mean, if you go to IndianaAFLCO.org, I mean, and see our endorsements, you'll see that we've endorsed Republicans as well. And we held off on endorsing staying neutral in quite a few races because of Republicans that help us out. I mean, it's getting to the point to where, you know, it shouldn't be but the whole party system is getting out of control, in my opinion, and we are educating our members to go after the issues. Whether you pull the ballot for a D or an R, we're educating them on that actual politician, on, you know, what they stand for, and regardless, you know, of their party affiliation. And we are getting, you know, more and more towards that. And I mean, you know, in the perfect world, we'd have our own labor party, which would be I would like to call the common sense party. But unfortunately, you know, that won't happen. Yeah, we do have a tendency to go more towards the Democrats because they do vote with us a lot more than the Republicans do. But even Democrats to this day and age, you know, need to grow a spine. And you know, stand up for what's right.
Yeah, I agree on that. I think we could use more spine across the board.
absolutely. And I mean, we need more, you know, down to earth people going to Congress. I mean, right now, you know, there's only a handful of folks that on both sides of the aisle that you can actually trust and talk to that's real. And it's really unfortunate that that's the way it is. But you know, we're starting to program ourselves, and it's actually been happening for a while, but we're going to ramp it up even more. We're going to start running our own members for political office, whether it be school board or whether it be Congress.
Yeah, I think I saw that.
We're going to do full all-out trainings and go and stay away from the wedge issues and you know, work on you know, issues, whether it be Social Security, Medicare, you know, living wage, and things like that.
Yeah, I believe there's a guy working or running for Congress in what will be Paul Ryan's ex district.
Is that right? Iron worker.
That's right. Pretty neat stuff. Yeah. Pretty interesting. And I do applaud you for trying to educate people. Let's talk a little bit about public versus private unions. I guess my thought's been, and we don't have a ton of time here, so I apologize if I go quick on this. My thought's been that in the private sector, absolutely, when you can show the value add to a person who's in the market looking for someone to do plumbing or electrical work or building a house or whatever, then and people can make a choice if they want to engage with that union or not, right? In the public sector, there frequently aren't those choices. There aren't those options. So I've always kind of looked at these two sectors differently as it relates to labor. What do you think about that?
I mean, obviously in the private sector, you're exactly right. I mean, you know, one thing that we have been trying to work on, and the building trades do a great job at it, is educating the general public on what we actually do. And obviously, you know, as far as work goes, whether it be a project at your home or whether it be, you know, building a multi-million-dollar building, you're going to get a lot better work from a union shop. I mean, just the simple reason that, you know, you go through a 5-year apprenticeship program and you're well trained in your trade, and I mean, they spend $43 million a year just in Indiana alone out of their own, you know, money on their education part. So, and not to mention that, you know, when you get done with a trade, you've got an associate's degree from Ivy Tech as well that we're partnered with. In the public sectors, it's a little bit tougher. You know, I mean, you're dealing with the government. It's hard to go in, and it's not like you're dealing with a CEO, you know, who's making billions of dollars off your back. I mean, you know, you're going in, and you've got to, you know, squeeze out what you can within a budget, whether it be the federal government, local government, or state government, and you've got to have the patience to be able to work with them and do, you know, what makes sense. But that's all they ask for as well, is just a fair share and a pension and decent health care at the end of the day. You know, unfortunately, here in Indiana, we don't have as many public sector unions. When Evan Bayh was governor, he did make an executive order and allowed all the state workers in the state to unionize. But then when Mitch Daniels was elected, he put in an executive order, and constitutionally, actually, and took away all the collective bargaining rights of all the state employees. So we still have some county and municipal employees that are organized, but not like many states surrounding us.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to get wrapped up here. I mean, what you're saying is you're making fair points, and I really thank you for coming on. I've got two questions here for you, and then I'll give you a couple seconds, and we'll close it out. Okay.
Yep.
So, in your opinion, yes or no, will we have right to work in Indiana 10 years from now?
Possibly 10 years from now. You know, that's tough. I mean, it's hard to predict the future. I think that probably at the minimum 10 years from now, we've got to chip away, unless something dramatically happens and we're able to get the maps redrawn in our state, which are very gerrymandered and not fair. But if something happens between now and 10 years, you know, there's a chance it could happen earlier. But the way the makeup is now, no, it'll be at least 10 years.
Sure. Okay, and then a second question. Would the AFL-CIO be interested in representing low-paid disc jockeys like myself?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Will you talk to my boss, Dave Crooks, about that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll come and meet with Dave face-to-face.
Awesome.
We'll get it done. I'll bring a contract.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to give you a couple seconds here, and we really appreciate you coming on, and just want to thank you for coming on in celebration of Labor Day.
No, I want to thank you guys for having me on today. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of history with labor, and I know we only scratched the surface on a few things. But, you know, I do want everybody to know that just keep in mind that, you know, when you get your mail delivered, when your kids are being taught in school, your first responders show up, whether it's the fire, whether it's the police, you know, those are union members. that actually do those things. Those are union members that are coaching your kids in Little League. Those are union members that you're sitting next to in church. We're the ones that pave your streets. We're the ones that work at in the federal government with your EPA and making sure your water is safe and your water's clean. I mean, those are union members. So think about that before you go to bed at night. And that's what unions do. We make sure that we take care of everybody. And we just ask for a livable wage and a return at the end of the day. So I want to, happy Labor Day to everybody. Celebrate, have a good time, go to parades and picnics, and take your well-deserved time off. And we'll just keep fighting. And I believe that the labor movement is on the rise, and I'm super, super excited about that.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Voorhees. Brett Voorhees, president of the state AFL-CIO. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Take care.
Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington. You can listen to a rebroadcast of today's show Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. on 4-Star Country, the General 95.9 FM, 1580 a.m. You can also listen to a copy of today's program and past shows by visiting WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Grant Swartzentruber, inviting you to tune in every Saturday morning at 8:35 a.m. on Memories 107.9 WAMW and each Sunday morning on 95.9 and 1580 WAMW as we focus on the community.